Nepotism, Sam explained. Then he looked at Gus and chuckled.
What? You thought death was the end? That there was nothing else after that? Oh, Gus, 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 all it means is that they passed over and are now on a different plane, a spiritual one. We can visit them like we were driving out of town, then just come back afterward.
I can see Ness? My dad?
Gus asked, feeling like the sucker punch he had received was rapidly fading away.
Of course you can. We'll have to wait until they're charged and sent over, but then it's no harder than a day trip, just like I said.
Sam said with a laugh, then clapped Gus on the shoulder.
Crazy, right? Still, I am sorry Ness and your father passed on. It definitely makes it harder to keep in touch with them, but nothing that terrible. Mail can create the portal if you just want to talk to them. Like a phone call, seeing them in person is the day trip. It's obviously not a substitute to being alive, but it isn't goodbye.
Gus shook his head, then promptly nodded it.
Thanks, Sam. I appreciate that a lot. I didn't even consider it.
Gus admitted.
No worries. Family and all that, right?
Said the incubus with a grin.
Now, I'm going to go have a snack. Feel free to make yourself at home. My plane is your plane.
Waving a hand at Gus, Sam turned and walked away, disappearing into a hall. Sighing, Gus put his face into his hands and stood there. He didn't know quite what to do with himself. His mother was missing, and his father was dead, as was Vanessa. It was comforting to know that they weren't beyond his ability to see, but it didn't change the fact that they were no longer here.
I'm sorry for your loss, Jill said in his mind. You did all you could. You arrived there as fast as you were able, and did all you could. There wasn't much else you could have accomplished, not without having been there. But even that isn't a guarantee it would have turned out differently.
You're right, of course. You're right. There wasn't much else I could do.
Indeed,
Jill agreed.
Where are you?
Gus hadn't actually seen Jill since she'd delivered him into the backyard per his request.
Medical. They're putting splints on my legs. Trish is here. She's helping. Her magic isn't doing much, though. It's really just taking the edge off the pain.
Jill said with a chuckle.
That's what I get for not learning how to land before I decide to fly, right?
Thinking about it, Gus wouldn't have been there for his father's final moments without Jill. He wouldn't have been there to at least secure Vanessa's body and preserve her remains. He wouldn't have seen his mother before she vanished. Turning on his heel, he set off to find medical. He had a debt to pay to Jill, and he wanted to state how he felt in person. What she did for him was immeasurable, something he couldn't actually repay to her in any simple way. Working his way through Sam's rather large compound, Gus was able to make his way to medical surprisingly quickly. It didn't hurt that everyone he asked for directions knew exactly where to go. They also provided him with more than serviceable directions. Long before he reached her, though, Jill was well aware that he was heading her way. It was nearly impossible for him to keep anything from her anymore. He felt like a man without any personal space these days. Indali could move through his thoughts as she liked. Jill practically lived in his mind. He was beginning to suspect that Serafina was always watching him from his own phone, and he would bet that Trish, Janelle, Chloe, and Melody often spent far too much time in Serafina's office, watching him from there. Entering the medical ward, Gus found Jill instantly. There was only one person being treated, and it was indeed Jill. Anna and Amy were both here, as were two nurses and a doctor. Everyone was fussing over the incubus and doing what they could for her.
Ah, perfect timing,
Amy said, turning and facing him directly. You're just what we needed.
I am?
Gus asked, walking over to Jill's bedside. He didn't see Trish anywhere, but he imagined she was likely nearby. Jill looked pretty beat up. She had a seriously swollen black eye, her face had several cuts across it, both legs were broken, and it looked like several of her fingers had been snapped as well.
Indeed,
Amy continued with a wide, heated smile.
My daughter is a succubus. The best thing for her right now is a good toss in the bed. Her father always charges my batteries 3 times a day just to keep me topped off. I'm sure once would be more than enough to get her put to rights.
Anna nodded at that and looked at them, giving him a look like the serial killer Gus suspected her to be.
Right,
Gus mumbled, looking at Jill. She promptly shrugged her shoulders. Visions of sexually explicit things were running through her mind, end over end. Images that ranged from vanilla conservative acts to things he hadn't even tried with Melody and hadn't considered.
I'm sorry. I can't control it anymore. I'm sorry,
mumbled Jill in their shared space.
Your dryad is prepping a bedroom,
Anna said, then pointed across the hall.
The nurses will carry my sister over momentarily. Take care of her. I have only ever had one sibling. She is my blood sister.
Really freaking strange. Okay,
said Gus after a second. He wasn't in the mood, not in the least. But he owed Jill a lot. And if this is what would fix her, he'd be the first one to jump in to help her. Or in this case, jump on her to help her. Chapter 27. Down Payment. Gus wasn't quite sure what to do with himself. The day had been a wild wash of emotions, revelations, new experiences, and changes. And it wasn't even the end of the day yet. He hadn't seen anyone other than Trish so far either. Gus was alone in the provided living space without anything to do. Gus did know that everyone was somewhere around here in Sam's complex, or on their way here. There was a lot to pack up from their home and move, along with other things that needed to be taken care of. Serafina herself had plenty of electronics, gadgets, and other things she wasn't willing to leave behind. Indali had been roped in to assist since her projection was working out of the same area. Chloe and Janelle were closing down anything that would be delivered to their home and settling accounts, while also getting things ready for them to more or less live on the move. Melody had last been spotted talking with their clients. The home they'd all lived in would simply be shuttered up for a time and left as it was. Looking at his phone, Gus took in a slow breath. Letting it out with a short huff, Gus put the phone back down on the small table in front of him. Sam was being an incredibly gracious host and had set aside a lot of room for everyone. Right now, Gus was sitting in the living room of the main housing area, not quite sure what to do with himself. The front door clacked and then opened, catching Gus's attention. Letting his eyes drift over that way, he saw Melody had just entered.
Hello, my indigo,
murmured the contractor. Closing the door behind her, she made her way over to him, dropping her keys, cell phone, and handgun off on the counter as she did so.
Hey,
Gus said, nodding his head at her. Saying nothing more, Melody walked up to stand in front of him, wrapped her arms around his head, and pulled his face against her chest and shoulder. She began to lightly run her fingers through his hair, holding on to him.
I know that... Oh,
she murmured and then paused.
I know that I can't really understand, but I empathize. I know that what you're going through is likely miserable. We all lost Ness together, but you also lost your father.
Gus took in a slow breath that he held, his hands slowly tightening on Melody's hips.
Believe me, Indigo, my beloved, that I empathize. I'll do all I can to lead our marriage through this,
Melody said softly, her fingers never stopping. Letting out a slow, low moan, Gus held on to her.
I know, I know. It's why you're our indigo,
whispered Melody, moving her hands to his back and curling up around him, resting her cheek on the top of his head.
Your heart is the biggest of all of us. Our boogeyman's center that holds us all together. Slow to love, great in its depth when given, and almost impossible to truly anger. Our forgiving and kind boogeyman.
Crying quietly into Melody, Gus just leaned fully into her, unashamedly letting his emotions dictate his actions.
To you, this will be the hardest, and it won't be the last either, I'm afraid. We're all effectively immortal. That means that given time, enough of it, someone else will meet their end. When old age is no longer an option, everything else is a given,
Melody said quietly, rubbing her cheek against his brow.
And through it all, I'll always be there to hold your heart, my indigo. My only one, my love. Because that's what I'm supposed to do as your contractor. My job is to protect my heart, my indigo.
It will get easier with time,
Jill offered from inside his mind. She was a warm, comforting presence that had only grown stronger after he had sex with her. Trish hadn't gotten involved at all, but she'd directed them, orchestrated it, and kept them going.
No one is telling you not to feel your grief, or that it's wrong. It's healthy, and you should let yourself experience it.
After they'd finished having very careful and gentle sex, it was clear she was feeling better. The broken bones were nearly completely healed, and all signs of her injuries had cleared up. The random bursts of absolute sexual need and images from Jill had also stopped flashing through his mind. She was once more the oddly excited young woman, eager to explore the world that had been denied to her. Though right now, her psychologist's background was peeking through. Gus didn't mind. He actually trusted her. There was no doubt in his mind that she had spent hours and hours going through his memories, thoughts, and experiences. She knew him inside and out and accepted him for what he was, for all the ugliness that was in him, just as Melody had. In fact, just as everyone in his marriage had.
It'll be all right, my love,
whispered Melody, turning her head and laying kisses on his hair.
It'll be all right. It won't be the same, but it'll be all right. And I'm making sure of it. I already told Kit, Lily, and my dad that we were withdrawing from the contract.
That was surprising to Gus.
We have more than enough money, more than enough powerful friends and places we can hide,
Melody murmured.
I'm not risking anyone else, not for something that doesn't actually concern us. For something that we were hired into and had no business being in. They all understand us getting out. I mean, they're not like us.
Sliding his arms forward, he wrapped them around Melody's hips, drawing her closer.
We're mortals with an infinite lifespan,
continued Melody.
We don't have the convenience of bringing our dead back to life like Sam, or the incredible durability of my father, or the dedication and determination that the judge and her forces have. Not to mention, they're all nearly as invincible as my father. Bullets wouldn't do anything to them. But for us, these mortal concerns, it's too much. Far, far too much. I should have gotten us out of this one earlier.
Wouldn't have mattered,
grumbled Gus, rubbing his face into Melody's chest, then pulling on her even more, as if he wanted to crawl into her.
They had clearly sighted on me, and were willing to hurt me. It was a question of when, not if.
Maybe, maybe not. We're still done with that contract,
Melody countered, then kissed the top of his head.
And I'll not listen to arguments.
I've made the decision.
Yes, dear,
Gus said with a weak chuckle.
Oh, you're being accommodating. Well, in that case, I should get as many concessions out of you as I can right now,
said Melody with a soft laugh.
Probably,
Gus admitted.
I want kids.
Okay. The first daughter is being named Vanessa, though.
Melody's hands continued to roam over his back.
I can do that,
Melody said after a few seconds.
I want to try and find my mom,
Gus murmured.
In the morning, though, I'm exhausted, and I don't want to go back to the house right now.
That's not a problem, Indigo. Gus, the love of my life,
whispered Melody.
Let's go to the bedroom, make love, and turn in for the night. We can go tomorrow morning, and I can do my thing. I'm sure I can track your mother. I tracked you, after all.
Taking a firm step back, Melody lifted his face up.
No, Indigo, honey. My love. Let's go to the bedroom. I want to love you,
Melody said, brushing a thumb over his cheek. Then she leaned down and kissed him. His parents' house had been scoured clean of everything. Sam's people had been thorough. It was as if nothing had happened at all. The bodies, cars, equipment, everything had been taken. Nothing was there that would be of any use to them. Melody had suggested to not bother with it, that perhaps they'd be better off reviewing what was retrieved instead. Standing in the room where everything had been piled up, Gus wasn't even sure where to begin or how. There was nothing available to him that would let him identify an item or how it was different than anything else. Standing there, he shook his head.
Mel, Rainbow, my love. I don't know how.
Melody was there in a flash, holding on to him and kissing him. Her hands pulled at him and practically yanked him off his feet. After a few seconds, she released him, staring up at him with wide eyes and a smile.
Say it again,
she hissed.
Duh,
Gus said dumbly.
Probably my love, if I don't miss my guess,
Indali offered.
Agreed. That probably did it,
confirmed Jill.
My love,
Gus said, trusting his two mental companions. Melody squealed and pulled at him again, chewing at her lower lip, gazing up at him as her indigo, red, and yellow contracts started to glow.
Love, sex, and emotions. We need to distract her,
Jill said.
Yes, immediately, said Indali. I'm not very good at distracting Mel.
Tell her you need her expertise. Appeal to her pride and her profession,
Jill suggested.
My love, Mel, would you tell me what to do here? I defer to your professional experience and expertise,
tried Gus. Melody's eyes widened slightly, and her yellow and indigo contracts started to grow brighter.
Indigo, I love you,
purred Melody, reaching up to pat his cheek.
I'll guide you.
Stroking his cheek for another second, Melody finally turned away from him toward the piles of items.
Good work, Jill,
congratulated Indali.
Yeah, thank you, Jill.
First, we determine if there's anything here with any attachments,
Melody said, and then held up her right hand.
Physical or otherwise. Because let's be honest, I doubt we'll find anything through conventional investigation methods. They were elite professional kill teams.
She made a small design in the air with her fingers, as if she were writing a sigil or a rune. Blue sparks began to crackle in the air in the path left behind by her finger. When she finally stopped, she reached up and poked the center of the glowing symbol with her thumb, like she was putting her print to it. With a muffled thump, the spell detonated and rushed forward, sweeping over everything that was laid out. Nothing happened immediately. Gus wasn't sure what to expect, either.
Nothing physical, then. So no magical connections,
Melody said, and then held her hand up again. Slowly, she began to draw her finger through the air once more. This time, there were blue and yellow sparks falling out of the symbol as it was drawn. It looked radically different from the previous one. Once more, she pushed her thumb to the center and the spell crackled, blowing up and outward. A single column of intermixed blue and yellow light shot up from the pile of equipment to one side.
Ah, we have a connection! But being both yellow and blue means it's spiritual,
Melody said, walking toward it.
I'm afraid my ability to contact the spiritual realm is limited to those who would want to talk to me. Won't stop me from trying, though. You can learn a lot, even from that.
I'm well versed in summoning circles and pentagrams,
Jill reminded him.
I don't think they'd talk to me, but we could force the spirit behind the connection to go backward, lead us to where they'd been for the last 24 hours of their life.
Jill could summon up the spirit,
Gus said, following Mel as she walked toward the column of light.
She said she could even track it back for the last 24 hours of its life.
Melody stopped in her tracks and looked over her shoulder at him.
She's stealing your head, then? She never left?
Melody asked, curious.
Sam assured me she'd be gone within a day. We tried.
We tried,
Gus admitted. At the same time, Jill said the same thing in his head.
She can't get out, and I can't get out of her head either. Sam was apparently wrong.
Melody frowned, her eyes searching his. Then she shrugged her shoulders and grinned at him.
Eh, these things happen. She'll just be our imp succubus, I suppose,
Melody said.
Impubus.
Impubus,
Gus corrected, once more in sync with Jill. Melody's eyebrows raised at that, the grin growing wider.
Jill, could you join us?
Melody asked, realizing that she could speak to her directly through Gus.
On my way,
she replied.
No, she's on her way,
muttered Gus. Holding up one hand, Melody snapped her fingers and then put her hands behind her back. The column behind her flashed with the snap, but then stabilized itself.
I'm rather excited. I haven't actually met her,
Melody said, casually strolling over to stand beside Gus.
I mean, I saw her, briefly. Very pretty. Quite lovely. Talked to her often on the phone during those 2 days, but I haven't met her. Everything's been so crazy.
Don't worry. I've already been coached by Trishan and Dolly more than I'd like to admit. And Dolly and I are able to chat without bothering you,
confessed Jill.
Wait, you can do that?
Yes, sorry. I didn't think to mention it,
apologized Indali.
I'm not a meeting room.
We'll keep that in mind,
assured Jill. The soft pad of shoes announced the arrival of the impubus before she appeared. Turning the corner, the beautiful woman walked slowly into the room.
Sorry, still healing. Takes a bit to move around,
Jill said with a wave of her hand, walking over to Melody. Right now, her wings and horns weren't visible.
Not a problem. Take your time, take your time,
Melody said, then walked over and hugged Jill quite firmly. Leaning into the woman, she whispered in her ear,
Thank you for what you did for Gus, and then what you did with him after,
Melody whispered. Gus heard her as clearly as if she'd been whispering to him, although he heard it through Jill's mind.
He'll never admit it, but sexing him after he's down really perks him up. Helps him distance things.
He can hear you,
whispered Jill back to Melody, hugging her back.
He's in my mind, remember?
Melody said louder, turning to look at Gus. Then she grinned at him and shrugged her shoulders.
I don't care admitting that. I sex you when you need it, Gus, for the sake of sexing you. And you sex me so well, it's not like I don't get something out of it.
Likewise, Gus said, rolling his eyes. Now, if we're done playing telephone, shall we ring up our spirit?
Maybe. I like talking about sex and sexing you. And this is a succubus. She loves talking about sex and sexing,
Melody said, having not released Jill.
In fact, I bet if I invited her to suck...
Jill clamped a hand down on Melody's mouth. A shroud of power enclosed Jill's mind, and she turned her head, putting her lips next to Melody's ear. A deep, powerful wave of sexual energy washed out from Jill, strong enough that Gus could actually feel it strike him, almost as if it were a physical force. Jill was a vision of beauty who was radiating massive amounts of sexual desire and promise, all directed at him while she whispered in Melody's ear. Then it stopped as quickly as it started. He didn't know what she said, but whatever it was, it made Melody go absolutely still. Then she nodded her head, almost hesitantly, then began to quiver in place, nodding her head much more quickly and energetically. Jill reached up and gently petted Melody on the head several times. Then she released her hand over Melody's mouth.
"Now, let's see about this spirit,"
Jill said, throwing off the shroud from her mind. Gus knew he could go raid her memories to find out what she had said, and knew Jill wouldn't care. In fact, she was purposefully presenting the memory for him if he wanted it. He figured she wanted privacy for the comment, though, and respected it.
"It wasn't anything bad,"
Indali assured him, seemingly speaking only to him. Walking over to the column of magic, Jill reached into the pile of equipment and pulled something out. Resting in her hand was a coin on a necklace. It had a hole drilled in the top and had been strung there.
"If I had to guess,"
Jill said, holding the piece up,
"I would wager this was a lucky item, one that they took into every battle, one they swore and believed in. Now, it's something we can use to call them. So, let's make ourselves a summoning circle."
Flipping the necklace around her wrist, then pushing the coin through it, it dangled from Jill's arm. Reaching into a pocket, she pulled out a black grease pen.
"Grease pens break really easy if you need to send them back,"
Jill explained, walking over to an open space.
"You wouldn't believe how touchy poltergeists get. Then again, given their mental makeup, it's not that surprising if you understand them."
Getting down to her knees very slowly, Jill began to draw out a 3-foot circle, along with a long and intricate series of sigils along the edge of it, only to make 2 smaller overlapping circles that linked with it.
"Physical circle. This is where we put our coin,"
Jill said, dropping the coin in the middle of the large central circle. Then she tapped the smaller circle to the left.
"Spiritual. This is where you put that spell, Mel. We'll use it as an offering. It has no purpose other than fuel."
Mel flicked her hand out and captured the spell that was still rotating over the coin and put it into the indicated circle.
"And lastly, for the 3rd circle, a bit of living material to form the bridge. It's probably not as precise as it should be. I don't have my notes, after all. But this is definitely close enough for what we're doing,"
Jill said, then looked at Melody and Gus.
Could I bother either of you for a knife?"
Not hesitating, Gus flicked out his carry knife, then pushed the tip up to the spot where he fed Chloe. He had no doubt he would end up feeding her today or tomorrow, which meant this little nick would be healed up in no time after she was done.
"Oh, thank you, Gus,"
Jill said, smiling up at him from where she was kneeling. It triggered a couple of memories from a few hours previously, much to Gus's shame. More so when Jill noticed his thoughts and sent him back a few more from her own point of view, along with her own fantasies, apparently. Grimacing, he dragged his wrist over the inside of the circle, smearing his blood across it.
"Now, we just activate it,"
Jill said, as if she weren't still sending him sexually charged thoughts and images. Reaching out with her grease pen, she made a small final sigil that linked everything together. A bright white glow spread across the whole thing, each piece lighting up. When the whole thing was clearly ensorcelled, there was a popping noise. Slowly, something appeared in the circle with the coin.
"Hello there,"
Jill said, looking at the slowly condensing spirit.
"I'm afraid I'm not here to talk, and your kind don't give information, not without a trade at least. Please forgive me for this."
Picking up the coin, Jill took it from the circle and wrapped it back around her wrist. The coin dangled from it once again.
"In you go,"
she said, breaking the circle with the coin directly. The spirit, still not even formed, was sucked out through the break and straight into the coin itself.
"And done," Now we just hit the road, I suppose,
Jill said, holding her wrist up. The coin was bending away from her as if it was being pulled on.
And we let it lead the way. Who's driving?
She asked, looking from Gus to Melody. Chapter 28. Bah. Sitting in the back seat, Gus was somewhat amused. Watching Jill and Melody work together was certainly a cause for entertainment. Melody would be Melody, only for Jill to respond with a question or a statement, which more often than not made Melody go quiet and thoughtful.
She's the anti-Melody, Indali murmured. If we ever needed someone to reel Mel in, it's Jill.
Feeling like today wasn't as bad as yesterday, Gus pulled his phone out of his pocket. There was no reason for him to butt in on Jill and Melody's conversation. Tapping his speed dial, he called Mark. Other than his parents, his sister, and those in his marriage, Mark was the only person on the planet he cared about. He needed to warn him and also tell him about Vanessa. Gus didn't think Mark and Vanessa had been close, but they'd known one another. They'd talked and seemed to generally enjoy one another's company.
Gussie, my favorite bang buddy. What's up?
Mark asked, picking up on the second ring.
Hey,
Gus said, and decided to dive right in.
You need to be careful. Several kill teams just went after my parents. My dad died. Ness died trying to protect them. Mom got out, but is missing.
There was a slow hiss of breath on the other end of the line.
I understand,
Mark said, completely serious.
If there's anything I can do, tell me. You're my brother, Gus. I'd go to any lengths to help you out. Just tell me what to do.
Grinning, Gus nodded his head and looked at his shoes.
I know. And thank you. I love you like a brother, Mark,
Gus muttered.
But for the moment, there's nothing to do. Just trying to put the pieces back together and keep moving. I needed to call you and warn you, though, to really tell you what was going on. Because these were actual kill teams. Not hired guns or anything like that. Kill teams with full equipment and hardware. They also paid off the locals, PID, and the Fed to not respond to the disturbance. Not even an ambulance showed up.
Right. Got it. I'll let Finn and Kelly know,
said Mark with a sigh.
Megan is staying with Finn and I right now. Kelly needed some time to herself.
Mark, being Mark, he knew Gus didn't want to talk any more about Vanessa and his father at the moment. That what he really needed right now was time and distance, and had neatly changed the subject.
Oh? Huh. That's good for Megan. Though I'm sad to hear Kelly isn't doing as well. Is she all right?
Gus asked. Looking back to the front seat, he found nothing had changed. Melody and Jill were still talking and driving. The car was rapidly heading out of the city and into the surrounding areas.
Therapy, actually. I'm going as well, and sometimes to her appointments. When she wants me there,
admitted Mark, sounding very uncomfortable.
It's over between us, obviously, but she's still Megan's mom. I'm trying to do what I can to give Kelly peace. Same with Megan.
Feeling rather shocked, Gus wasn't sure what to say.
Finn might have encouraged me to do it. She's kind of, fixing me, I guess,
Mark mumbled.
I'm happy in my life right now.
It was hard for Gus listening to this given his own situation, but he was genuinely overjoyed to hear Mark was happy. His life had been the job and rushing forward. Forward and likely ignoring everything that was behind him. Gus had found himself at the bottom of a bottle. Mark had jumped up the ladder.
And that kinda comes back around to something else, Mark said. If you have a minute...
Yeah, I got time. Just on a drive,
Gus said.
I wanted to, Being completely honest, Finn suggested it, and I really agree with her, because if we hadn't listened to you about pulling out of what we were doing, pretty sure we'd end up being disappeared. A lot of people who were pushing cases have vanished or retired, and
Mark said, starting to ramble.
Duh, I get it. What are you asking?
Gus prompted.
I know you said you'd be his godfather.
Of course, I'm Megan's. Why wouldn't I be for your secondborn? Hey, and you said his? It's a boy?
It's a boy. Healthy, as far as we can tell,
said Mark, followed by the sound of his chair creaking.
Did he seriously drag that chair along with them again?
Finn suggested we name him Gustavus. I agree with her, but I wanted your blessing on that before we did it.
Dumbstruck, Gus sat there, staring out the front windshield, not truly comprehending what was being said.
Finn knows everything. I told her all of it, of basically how you got me out of the desert. And then, with everything you said about the Fed, she feels like without you, I wouldn't be here. Which is pretty obvious. And that without you, she wouldn't be as happy as she is. So, she wants to name her first child Gustavus.
I'm flattered,
Gus said after several more seconds.
Of course, if that's what she wants to name him, I'm all for it.
At the moment, he felt very shocked. It was the last thing he ever expected to come out of Mark's mouth.
Great. Then, Gustavus Eric. Now you just need to have a daughter and name her Finn, and then they can get married. Pretty sure that's the only way I'm ever going to get my genes in yours. That, or I have another daughter and you can have a son. That'd work too.
Rolling his eyes, Gus started to laugh. Mark would always be Mark.
Anyway, so, get this. Pregnant sirens? No end to the sex drive. Holy shit, man,
Mark said, starting up again.
Last night she...
This is it?
Melody asked, looking at the building on the other side of the street. They were pulled up at a gas station right now. Gus was pumping gas while Melody and Jill covertly eyed the target.
I mean, that's the direction it pulled,
Jill murmured, leaning up against the car next to Melody.
And we circled all the way around it. It never veered in either direction. You know,
Melody said, turning to look at Jill.
I'm a little jealous now. I probably can't go in there. My skill set is more... it's more tuned for people. Like, normal people. Or para. Not military organizations bent on ruling the world. Or whatever it is they're doing.
Melody waved a hand somewhat angrily toward the building.
There's no way I can go in there. Not at all. But you and your sexy boobs can just sneak in there with my husband,
growled the contractor.
And I have to sit out here waiting for you to finish.
Jill turned and faced Melody directly.
We all have our toolboxes. Yours is specific to your needs, just as Gus's is. Without your magical ability to find the right item, we wouldn't be here,
said Jill with a soft tone.
Neither he nor I would have any way of doing what you did. Would you say that makes him or me less? No,
Melody said, her brows drawing down low over her eyes.
Then why would you be any less for not having a tool for this part of it?
Jill asked with a bright smile. Then she reached up and patted Melody on the head gently.
Do you really think that way, Mel? Or are you just feeling the same ache and hurt that Gus is feeling, just in a different way?
Melody's lips quivered and then smoothed out. Her face was a solemn, unmoving wall.
You don't have to be strong for Gus's sake. He'd understand. He wept himself, did he not?
Jill asked, running her fingertips through Melody's hair.
Just because you protect someone else doesn't mean they can't protect you in turn, or someone else, for that matter.
Melody sniffed hard, her throat contracting.
I lost my yellow,
Melody said in a low moan. Jill wrapped an arm around Melody's shoulders and drew her in close.
You did. That you did,
Jill said soothingly as Melody started to sob brokenly. Catching Gus's eyes with her own, she flicked them toward the building.
Go take a look. I'll get her squared away,
Jill asked.
Sure, and thanks.
Of course. It's my job, in a way. Besides, as we've already figured out, I can't get out, and neither can you.
Jill said with a soft laugh inside his mind.
Might as well start working my way in, right?
Gus wanted to fight against that idea, especially given that Vanessa had only just died. But he also realized what she said was correct. More so because with how deeply she was in his mind now, he couldn't quite begin to figure out where she ended and he began anymore. Because he was just as deep in her mind. He'd already experienced several times where it felt like he couldn't figure out who thought something between the two of them.
I know that you feel that way. I understand it. That's a perfectly logical way to feel. I'm not looking to replace her, but I can't deny our position. And thank you for visiting me last night, by the way. I didn't think you'd come, despite me, well, begging,
said Jill as Gus started heading for the corner of the intersection to cross.
It worked, didn't it? All healed. No more problems.
All healed. You'll still need to visit me regularly, though. Amy said, my mom says it's not something I can control. You eat fear, I eat, well, you,
Jill explained.
If it makes you feel better, I feel absolutely mortified when we're done. I'd only ever been with two men, you know. It's not like I was a font of experience and desire.
Sighing, Gus put his hands in his pockets, smacked the button for the crosswalk, and stood there sullenly.
No, it doesn't make me feel better. I'm sorry this happened to you. It isn't as if you asked for it.
Well, thank you for that. And no, I didn't ask for it, but I'm enjoying it. Throwing a fit or a tantrum wouldn't be very productive,
said Jill.
Now, forgive me. I'm going to blanket our connection. I'm going to work with mail.
A deep curtain slowly swung in place between their minds. It wasn't very strong. To be honest, he could push through it if he wanted to. It wouldn't even take much effort on his part at all. To him, it felt more like a privacy screen rather than a barrier, and he'd respect it.
Have I mentioned how much I really like her? Indali asked. Because if I haven't said it, I'll say it now. She went through every person in our contract and checked in with them, gave them a shoulder, talked to them, and generally consoled them. She even came to me, amusingly enough.
Oh?
Yes. I'm not ashamed to admit, after a while, she managed to slip through my mental defenses. We talked about my time in prison and Ness. I really like Jill, Gus,
Indali said again. He now understood what she was saying, that Jill was going to likely get approval from everyone very quickly about remaining with them. Walking across the street when the light pinged, Gus pushed all thoughts of everything else away. He needed to check this place and see what was here. This was likely where the people had come from who'd taken Vanessa and his father from him. Getting to the other side of the street, he contemplated the front door. Looking at it, he frowned. Stepping up over a small planter box, he entered the parking lot for the building. He'd noticed something that made him wonder if it was perhaps an empty building. There was no fear coming from it, at all. Not even the vague, general fear he'd felt from the plant. It was more like an empty hole.
Or a cemetery.
Reaching the door, Gus leaned in close to the window next to the door and put his hand to it. Putting his brow to his hand, he tried to see into the building inside. Something slowly swung back and forth, shining light all around, almost like a light that had been ripped out of the ceiling and was hanging on a wire. Gus decided to be somewhat brazen and pulled on the front door's handle. With a pop, the door clattered out of its frame and fell toward him suddenly. Dodging to the side, he managed to get out of the way as it crashed heavily to the ground. Looking into the doorway, Gus could see that the doorframe itself was heavily damaged. Claw marks raked down one side and up the other. It was also liberally painted with blood that was splattered around, as if someone had spiked a bunch of blood-filled water balloons. Body parts, blood, and chunks of what appeared to be flesh were everywhere.
Never mind the water balloons, like running people through a wood chipper.
Your mother is terrifying,
Indali said softly. Gus hadn't quite made the connection, but now that he heard it, he knew it was true. This was his mother on a complete rampage. An absolute murder spree, he suspected, using the information his father had torn from the minds of those who were attacking. He didn't believe for an instant that anyone in this building remained alive. His mother wasn't like him or Paris. She was a full boogeyman, with the main tie to humanity in her life now lost.
Father kept her grounded, very grounded.
Picking his way along the hall, he began to delve deeper into the building. Hallway after hallway, office after office, Gus found only a massacre. There was not a soul left behind. Men and women in office clothes, guards, it didn't matter. If they existed in this building when his mother had arrived, they were no longer among the living. By the time he found the elevator that led down, he wasn't even sure he wanted to go down there to look. The doors had been torn off the frame, claw marks passing right through the walls surrounding it.
I could never do something like this. I'm strong. My magic is powerful. But, Mom, you're in a league all your own, aren't you? Sarah?
Gus said, looking down into the elevator shaft.
Yes,
she replied.
Should I bother connecting you into anything here?
Gus asked.
Probably not. If it's anything like any of the other locations we've been to, there's nothing to gain,
Seraphina muttered.
Should dock me in anyway, though. I'm testing out my new setup, still getting used to a few things, and the hardware.
All right.
Heading back the way he came, Gus entered the first office he found. The computer was powered on and working. Pulling his phone out, he set it down next to him and then flicked it open.
I'm going to call you. Accept the call. It'll make this easier. I can transfer much more of myself over with an active line,
Seraphina said. The phone began to ring. Gus tapped at the accept button negligently as he pulled out the charging cable. It was the easiest way to get her plugged into the computer. With a click, the earpiece died and then came back.
Gus?
Seraphina asked.
Yup,
Gus muttered, looking at the phone. Sitting in a high-tech chair with actual holographic interfaces in front of her was Seraphina. She had a headset on her head and was clearly wearing what looked like some of Chloe's club clothes.
Hey,
Gus said, wondering what was going on. He appreciated the view, but he also wasn't quite sure why she'd turned it on.
What's wrong?
Seraphina asked, not looking at the camera.
Nothing, just, admiring the view, I guess. You look great,
Gus said honestly. Seraphina froze up, then looked around until she finally spotted the camera.
What? Oh my god.
The line went dead and the video feed was lost. Once more, the earpiece popped.
Go ahead and plug me in. Never mind the call, grumbled Seraphina.
She looked good, right? We keep telling her she looks gorgeous. Chloe had been making a try on her clothes. She's going through her wardrobe and getting rid of things, Indali explained, which means she's forcing everything on Sarah.
Not responding to the very obvious trap, Gus instead pulled out the cord and plugged it into the cell phone and then the computer.
I'm in. Give me a bit,
growled Serafina, who was clearly unhappy about the camera. Nodding his head, Gus sat there. Leaning back in the chair, he crossed one leg over the other, resting his ankle atop his knee. Sitting there, he quietly bided his time. Gus's thoughts were interrupted by the crunch of glass that preceded a man walking through the hallway. Stopping in front of the office door Gus was in, he turned and looked at him. He had oddly gray hair that was trimmed short. His brown eyes looked like they'd seen too much and done even more. Hard eyes that Gus recognized as belonging to a man who'd fought the world and everyone in it. The same kind of eyes Gus saw every morning in the mirror.
My love, did you find something? Asked a voice.
A beautiful woman bounced into view behind the man. She had dark brown hair that was pulled back behind her elongated ears. Looking as eternal as most elves did, she was extremely pretty. A black collar was wound around her neck. It led to a shining silver chain that dangled down from her neck and reached the ground. It then pooled there and came back up toward the man, the end of it wrapping itself through one of his belt loops.
It's an Yogi Boogie Boo, my love,
said the elven woman with a laugh. Then she pressed herself up to the man's back and held on to him, her arms wrapping around his middle.
What are you doing here?
Asked the man in a low growl.
I'm talking to everyone here to try and figure out who this is,
Indali practically shouted in his mind.
Stall for time!
As delicately as he could, Gus flicked out a speck of psychic energy at the man.
Oh, none of that now, the elf said with a giggle a second after his psychic thread vanished. Naughty, naughty, Mr. Boogeyman.
Sticking her tongue out sideways, the elf nuzzled her cheek against the man's back, watching Gus.
Okay,
Gus said, holding up his hands.
I'm here because people from this building came and killed my father and my wife. I'm just an ex-Fed PID detective who was working a case.
Deciding that honesty was the best policy considering how easily the elf had picked up his magic and annihilated it, Gus was well and truly unnerved. The man stared without moving, blinking, or twitching.
Really?
Gus said as the silence dragged on.
Only here because a kill team from this building killed my dad and my wife. That's it, really. I didn't do any of this. I just walked in and it was like this.
Clicking his tongue, the man looked defeated and annoyed.
I'm sorry,
said the man in a low voice.
I don't want to do this, but I have no choice.
With a sigh, the elf let go of the man and moved a step away, and the man started moving toward him. Gus had the impression that this was about to end very badly. Getting out of his seat, Gus scrambled to the side at the same time that the man simply walked through a desk. A casual swat of his hand splintered it and sent it crashing into a wall.
Fuck!
Call him Steve, right now!
Shouted in Dolly, even as the man approached him.
Steve!
Gus said loudly, holding his hands up in front of himself. Freezing in place, the man stared at him, his eyes widening. There was a trickle of fear that suddenly came from the man, where there had been none before. Fear of being watched.
My love, my love, my love, I need to die. He can't hear, can't see, must not. I love you, my love, only you,
said the elf loudly, putting her hands to her ears and closing her eyes. She literally turned and ran away at a dead sprint, her leash rapidly winding out as she got further away. It eventually ran out of slack, and there was a sharp ping as the chain went completely taut, followed by a thump and the chain relaxing. The man didn't even flinch as the elf seemingly hit the end of her line.
Tell him he just needs to wait. Alex said to tell him, just wait a little longer, Steve,
Indali said quickly.
Then, bar at him?
The fuck are you telling me to do? He's a fucking monster. You want me to fucking bar at him? You have maybe 10 seconds to tell me where you heard that name,
whispered the man.
My poor Lena. She bought me a little time, but not much. Not enough. Make it quick. Just wait a little longer, Steve. Bah!
The man, who was apparently named Steve, went very pale, his skin fading rapidly to the color of absolute bleached parchment. Suddenly, he began to breathe hard and heavy, his hands quivering at his sides. An overwhelming amount of fear blasted out of the man for a single second and then vanished. Gus couldn't identify it. It was gone too quickly, but it had been very strong.
Go. Quickly. Go now. Don't come back. Please, go now. I'll wait as long as I can,
Steve said in a broken whisper, looking to one side.
He'll stop paying attention soon.
Not hesitating, Gus grabbed up his phone, skirted wide around the very frightening man, and ran down the hall. Up ahead, he could see the elf lying spread-eagle on the ground. Her neck was bent at a weird angle, and her face was rapidly turning red.
She fucking killed herself? What the fuck is going on?
Leaping over the very obviously dead elven maiden, Gus exited the building, hit the parking lot, and carried on at a dead run.
We have no idea. Everyone is demanding that Alex explain it, but all he says is that's what the originator told him to do if he ran into Seville. That's who that was, Indali said. Other than that, all he'll say is he was happy to give you his own get-out-of-jail-free card. Because you're his uncle.
Chapter 29. Bug Out. Closing the car door and sitting in the back seat, Gus closed his eyes and put a hand over them. What he just encountered wasn't something he should be dealing with.
Oh, I'm just a boogeyman that's an ex-fed. That's it. This is all so way, way beyond me. Way beyond all of us. This is a clash for titans, not the likes of us.
Was it that bad?
Melody asked in a soft voice. The question wasn't directed at him.
Yeah, it was. Like staring down a tsunami,
Jill replied, equally as quiet. Gus could hear them talking outside through his window. He'd accidentally left it cracked.
Dad has told me about Seville, but I've never met him. I just know that I was to never go anywhere near him,
Melody said, then opened her door.
I'm glad to be going home, but sad we couldn't stick around.
Doesn't matter. Mom clearly took care of it, and is likely still taking care of it,
Gus muttered.
It isn't as if she needs my help in what she's doing. I hope my dad's words stick with her.
Melody closed the car door and nodded her head.
I think they will. The same reason she's raging right now is why his words will stick with her,
said Melody.
But I'll just say it now. I'm so, so very glad I got on your mother's good side. That I'm a nice daughter-in-law who she likes.
Gus snorted at that, then chuckled.
Dad mentioned only recently that he got tired of having to bury bodies,
Gus admitted.
Never knew he'd been burying bodies to begin with. I get the impression my mom was very intolerant of people, and my dad really was the only break she had.
Wouldn't doubt that for a second,
Melody said, easing up next to him. Then she laid her head on his shoulder.
Does that make you my break?
Probably, said Gus, putting an arm around her. Jill can be our therapist. I'll be the break.
Nothing wrong with that,
Jill said from the other side of the car.
Every relationship needs someone who can pump the brakes as needed. Otherwise, it's just a series of ever-escalating issues.
Gus's phone vibrated in his pocket once.
I mean, that's pretty much it, right?
He asked, fishing his phone out of his pocket. Looking at it, he saw it was a message from Mark. Tapping it open, he saw it was a video. Looking at the first frame, he was fairly certain it was Finn's eyes and the top of her head.
Oh, Mark, I swear, please tell me this isn't some porn of Finn going down on you. She's a beautiful woman and all, but I really don't want to see this.
Shaking his head, Gus ignored the video and closed the message. He'd check it later if he felt brave. At the moment, he didn't.
All right, let's go get debriefed. Maybe they can tell us something we don't know,
Gus muttered. Gus's phone vibrated in a strange way on the bedside table next to him, waking him up from a dead sleep. Groaning, he sat up partially and looked at his phone. He couldn't see what it was from here, and the screen had already depowered. It was set on a very low timer for notifications to light the screen.
Oh, is it an Amber Alert again? Those always sound different. Kinda weird for 4 a.m., though.
Melody made a sniffing noise next to him in the bed and snuggled closer to him. Reaching over, he picked up his phone and powered up the screen. Freezing as he saw that it was a message from Mark, Gus felt his stomach flop over itself. He'd put up a very specific tone on Mark's contact ID if it sent him a high-importance message. The message was very simple and made Gus break out in a cold sweat. 333. The first three was designated as the situation. I'm under extreme duress and have bugged out. The second was the location in question. Residence compromised. Primary meetup likely compromised. Moving to secondary. The third would only occur if his family was also in question. Family under extreme duress and has bugged out. Standing up, Gus got out of bed. He responded with the number 1 to Mark.
Melody!
Gus hissed.
What?
Asked the sleepy contractor.
Mark's in trouble. I have to get to him.
Gus explained, not really waiting. He was already throwing on a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. Not even bothering with shoes or socks, he left the bedroom.
Catch up if and when you can. I'm sorry. I love you. I can't lose anyone else,
Gus said, moving at a near run down the hallway. He needed to get to the portal room Sam kept as soon as he could. He needed to get out to St. Anthony, and now. Mark would likely be moving north out of the city, then would swing around to the west and finally south, to a cabin they'd designated as their secondary meetup point. Patting at his chest, Gus realized he'd forgotten in Dolly. Additionally, he'd forgotten his earpiece, which meant he wouldn't be able to hear Serafina. He didn't even have his wallet. All he had on him was his phone.
Don't need anything. Just need me.
Gus's thoughts solidified as he passed out of the living areas and into the working areas. Even at this hour, there were people going about their business. Given that this was Sam's home, it was unsurprising that they were all quite attractive women. Dodging around an Amazonian beauty, Gus kept moving. He needed to get to the portals. And now.
Mark needs me.
And you need me,
shouted a voice in his mind. There was a hard whoomph behind him that caused him to look over his shoulder. Jill was there, her wings settling down on her back. He wasn't sure how she knew to be here or how she caught up with him, but he wasn't going to argue. There was a pressure inside his head that he'd grown to understand. Jill was ransacking his memories and thoughts. From what he picked up from her, she was going after where they were supposed to go to catch up with Mark, starting first with his house to recon it, then off to the meetup. Heading into the portal room, Gus slowed down to look at the portals. He needed to figure out which one was which, but there were far too many here. Looking to the side, he once again found a beautiful woman at a desk with a large display in front of her.
Which one goes to St. Anthony?
Gus asked with urgency. Not responding to him, the woman looked at her display and tapped a button. All the portals winked out except one.
Thank you! I owe you!
Gus yelled, even as he ran straight toward the portal. Running through it at full speed, he exited into the office next to the lobby. It was a building Sam owned. He knew where it was, of course. He'd taken this portal once already. Dashing through the door after yanking it open, Gus sped through the lobby and ran straight outside, his bare feet slapping against the cement. Coming to a stop, he started to look around. He needed a car, and he was going to take one by force. Gus was knocked off his feet and then began to rocket up into the air. Jill's arms were wrapped around his middle and holding tightly to him.
Front yard?
She asked.